Talk Back with Gary Knoll, Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. You can watch this program by going to GaryKnoll.com. Today, all about health and healing, living a longer and more vital life. I'm going to give you the constructive information, positive solutions, and I'm also going to give you the consequences of making wrong choices. I'm going to talk about sugar high, the dark history and nasty methods used to feed our sweet tooth by Jill Richardson of Alternet. I'm going to give you the latest on krill oil, optimizing your anti-arthritic condition from Jason Ramirez. And also, you want to lower that blood sugar level after a meal so it doesn't spike? Well, Daniel Becker from Life Extension has something good to say. What vitamin C can do to help prevent infection? And are you afraid of terrorists? Well, if you're the average American, and based upon how we seem to be giving away our rights, our constitutional rights, our Bill of Rights, becoming a, in effect, an overly regulated society as far as the military-industrial spy network, the answer is yes. All right, fair enough. I'm going to ask you to use critical, rational judgment. That means look at facts and figures and tell us which should you really fear, terrorists or the 15 leading causes of death in the United States. An analysis from myself and William Floon on that. Why are young girls reaching puberty at 7? Not 14, at 7. I'll tell you about that as well. So there's a consequence to every choice in life. Sometimes it's sooner, more often than not it's later. So I'm going to balance the problems and the solutions. Let's begin. A lot of people end up getting infections. In fact, this year alone, over 100,000 Americans will die from infections they receive inside of hospitals. The amazing thing is that most of these can be easily prevented if people simply washed their hands, washed under their fingernails, and did what I consider the single most important thing, to really sterilize the environment. How do you do that? Many ways of doing it. If they just took hydrogen peroxide and wipe down all the surface areas, that would do it, but they don't. As a result, we frequently end up with infections. Now, some people end up with infections in their blood called sepsis. The good news is that one single injected dose of vitamin C may not only prevent the onset of sepsis, but also reverse the disease, according to data from the University of Western Ontario and Lawson Health Research Institute. And I'll quote this here. Now, as we know, by the way, sepsis is caused by a bacterial infection that can begin anywhere in your body. Your immune system goes into overdrive, overwhelming normal processes in your blood. The result is that small blood clots form, blocking blood flow to vital organs. This can lead to organ failure. Babies, the elderly, and those with weakened immune systems are most likely to get sepsis. But even healthy people can become deathly ill from the disease. About 40% of the people who have sepsis die. Now, according to data from a study, quote, our research in mice with sepsis has found that early as well as delayed injections of vitamin C improves chances of survival significantly. Furthermore, the beneficial effects of a single bolus injection of vitamin C is long-lasting and prevents capillary plugging for up to 24 hours post-injection. Vitamin C is cheap and safe. Previous studies have shown that it can be injected intravenously into patients with no side effects. It has the potential to significantly improve the outcome of sepsis patients worldwide. This could be especially beneficial in developing countries where sepsis is more common and expensive. Two studies, both concurring vitamin C. Now, here's my question. If you have sepsis and vitamin C can help stop it, ozone intravenous could also do the same. But what about all the people that have other non-sepsis infections? bacterial infections, meningital infections, viral infections. Why shouldn't they be given vitamin C also? Unless they're on an extremely a powerful blood thinner, because vitamin C is a natural blood thinner. Think of all the lives we could be saving if it's a matter of routine policy. All the people going into hospital were given vitamin C, checking their serum levels and giving them vitamin C and marking their immune response. I believe we could cut deaths from hospital infections by half. So that's something that's important to know. Now, also consuming polyunsaturated fats can lower your incidence of gum disease. By the way, gum disease is a big disease. This is a new study in the Journal of the American Dietetic Association. Here's what it says. Periodontal conditions, common inflammatory diseases in which gum tissue separates from teeth, leading to accumulation of bacteria and potential bone loss and tooth loss. Although traditional treatments concentrate on the bacterial infection, most recent strategies target the inflammatory response. In an article in the Journal of the American Dietetic Association, researchers from Harvard Medical School and Harvard School of Public Health found that dietary intake of polyunsaturated fatty acids like fish oil have an anti-inflammatory property, shows promise for the effective treatment and prevention of periodontal conditions. That's good news. Now, your holistic dentist would have already told you that. Be taking the omega fatty acids twice a day, in the morning and the evening, but that's something that we should all be paying attention to. About 10 years ago, I competed in a championship race inside of a mall. Now, I'd never raced in a mall before. I didn't know there were races in a mall, but it was in Connecticut, and someone had sanctioned it. And it was not the best course because it was very slippery. It had all this polished floors. People were falling. However, it was kind of fun. What was important is I got there to loosen up about an hour before the race. The place was packed. It was packed mainly by people, older people, power walking around the mall before the stores opened. I'm not talking about a few or a few dozen. I'm talking about several hundred. And I spoke with some of them, and this is how they came. Because A, it was a very safe place. B, it was all weather. Didn't matter what was happening outside. C, they liked the idea that other people that they could socialize with or speak with were there if they chose to. And I thought, well, that's terrific. We should be supporting mall walking everywhere in America. Here's the latest. This is from S.L. Baker, naturalnews.com. Quote, research shows that walking can protect your memory down the road. I'll quote this. One of the greatest fears associated with growing older is the thought of memory problems, including the mind-robbing nightmare of Alzheimer's disease. But there appears to be a natural way to help protect yourself from dementia that involves nothing more complicated than putting on your walking shoes and walking. New research just published in Neurology, the medical journal of the American Academy of Neurology, strongly indicates that walking just 6 miles per week may protect against brain aging from growing smaller and, in turn, preserve memory of an old age. Quote, brain size shrinks in late adulthood, which can cause memory problems. Our results should encourage well-designed trials of physical exercise in older adults as a promising approach for preventing dementia and Alzheimer's disease, end quote. This was from the University of Pittsburgh. So, here's the takeaway message from this. Young people don't exercise enough. A lot of time is spent in sedentary activity, in front of computers, televisions, PlayStations, on the cell phones. Most adults sit. They're sitting at their job. They're not really physically active, and they should be. Senior citizens get the least amount of exercise, even if they have the most time on their hands. I believe that we should encourage a national, from the Surgeon General and all of our major health agencies like the U.S. Public Health Service and the White House, to have a major physical fitness year, where in every town, large or small in America, we encourage people to learn power walking. Get them out, get them walking, have routes that will be monitored, that are safe for people, show them how to power walk, and I believe that we could cause the following to happen. One, it would produce more of the hormones necessary for human growth hormone. That, in turn, leads to keeping your muscles strong and vibrant longer. It also keeps your body's metabolism at a better rate, less likely to gain fat. It stimulates the release of endorphins, your feel-good hormones. So you're going to feel much better. 1 hour of power walking in the morning will allow hormones that allow you to feel better for 6 to 7 hours. Then you're also going to speed up your lymphatic drainage. So all that bacteria and all the cancer cells your lymphatic system is holding in those lymph glands, that can be flushed out of the body. You'll get a better night's sleep. And you'll secrete more melatonin, which protects your brain when you're asleep. You also will have a better detoxification, as the liver will produce more detoxifying materials to throw into the mix. So, in effect, it's like putting a Roto-Rooter into a clogged drain. It opens it up. The more you can do in the way of walking, the faster your elimination system. So you'll speed up elimination from the kidneys, the liver, and your intestines. Far less constipation. You'll get better muscle tone. All that from simply doing a national walking program. Think of how we could help people with heart disease, depression, diabetes. All good. By the way, since 1977, when I started it, the Natural Living and Running and Walking Club has trained over 23,000 people to do the New York City Marathon, and tens of thousands of more who didn't do the marathon but wanted to come get in shape. I will do our next workshop in about 2 months. We'll start again, but we're not training this time for the marathon. For the first time, not that people can't. Of course, there'll be people who want to do the marathon, but our new goal is to get people to be able to do 5 miles of power walking and jogging each day, 6 days a week. Watch how much healthier people are when that happens. Now, most people like chocolate, and now we're getting the idea that healthy chocolate is good for us. Not all chocolate is healthy. Some has sugars, fructose, chemicals in it, but today there are so many companies who are coming in with raw chocolates and organic chocolates and fair trade chocolates. You've got a large selection. Here's the latest on why you should have some chocolate each day. This is from Hall University and published in the Journal of Diabetic Medicine, the official journal. Quote, one of the ingredients of dark chocolate may help diabetics control cholesterol levels. The Hall University study shows that chocolate with high levels of coca solids is rich in polyphenols and can reduce the risk of heart disease. It found that cholesterol fell in some of the diabetics given the chocolate bars. So that's good, and it took 16 weeks in this particular study. Now, here's my suggestion. Don't go overboard. Don't eat too much chocolate. But if you got a good quality, healthy chocolate, you're getting polyphenols. Now, at least 20 years ago, I was telling about the role of polyphenols in keeping us healthy. So it's nice to know that there's at least 300 other studies showing us why chocolate is good for us. But something else is good for us, and also good for cholesterol. Vinegar. So we go from the sweet to the tart. Yesterday, I ran into a person who is a friend. Well-known person, loved by most, and who's having some health challenges. So we sat there for an hour, and one of the hardest challenges this person's had is with salt. Just too much salt. And what can I do, Gary? I said, it's simple. Lemon juice mixed with vinegar in equal parts, especially unpasteurized apple cider vinegar. Unpasteurized, yes. It's rich in a lot of nutrients that the body can use. It's very good if you're too acidic. Here's the latest on this. And it gives you a salt taste, and it evenly disperses. Let's say if you put salt on a salad and you eat the top of the salad, then you got to put salt on the next layer of salad and then the next layer of salad. So you put salt throughout it. But if you put vinegar and lemon juice and then you toss it, then the leaves are bathed in vinegar and lemon juice together, and the two together taste just like Himalayan sea salt. And that way you don't have to rely upon salt in the form of sodium. Quote, a spoonful of vinegar a day may boost your level of good cholesterol. This is from the University of Minnesota. It says researchers believe that people who consume apple cider vinegar for 8 weeks will improve the levels of their good HDL cholesterol compared to those given a placebo. This was a double-blind study, and they showed that those who had the apple cider vinegar made a substantial improvement. So that's important. Now, mind you, that the main benefits they found is health benefits to the eye and the skin. Also, it's been known to help joint health and central nervous system health, and is said to have an antioxidant payload 500 times that of vitamin E. And beyond such benefits, it does a lot of other things in the body. So, hence, that's why you want that. Now, also for diabetics in the audience or people who are helping diabetics, cinnamon. A good dose of cinnamon, a daily dose of 2 grams of cinnamon for 12 weeks can improve blood pressure and blood sugar levels in type 2 diabetes. That's a new research from Imperial College London. According to this randomized placebo-controlled double-blind clinical study, cinnamon is considered just a superstar when it came to competing against diabetic drugs. And I suggest putting cinnamon in with coconut water. If you have high blood pressure, 1 12-ounce glass of coconut water, 2 grams of cinnamon, and then drink that. A, it's delicious, but more importantly, you're loading the body with potassium. That's good. It'll help lower blood pressure, and so will the cinnamon. Also kills cravings for food. The latest study from Nature magazine, and also a separate study from Cancer Causes and Control, both show that highly cooked foods contain cancer-causing agents, and processed sugars produce insulin-like growth hormone, which studies have shown encourage the growth of cancer cells. Well, let's just take a look. In lay language, what are we talking about? We're talking about something as simple as a hamburger, a hot dog. The bun is processed sugars in the form of simple carbohydrate, and that stimulates insulin growth hormone. The meat, highly cooked, produces heterocyclic amines, 2 causes of producing cancer. But we don't want to increase our risk. We want to go towards a healthy vegetarian diet with lots of beans. The more beans, the better. And if you want to help prevent a lot of the gas from beans, soak the beans overnight and put apple cider vinegar and lemon juice into the soaking water. And then when you're cooking them, and pressure cook them is really the best way, and then you drain the water out that you use. Don't cook them in the same water you drain them, as most people do. Then you shouldn't have the problem with gas. New information on what we can do with garlic. We can use it daily. It helps lower blood pressure. This is the latest study. This is done at the University of Adelaide and a group of scientists, and they found by giving garlic on a daily basis, that's 960 milligrams. That's not a lot. That's a very small amount. That it made a big difference, quote, aged garlic extract is regarded as safe and more tolerable than garlic powder, superior to raw or cooked garlic in relation to its antihypertensive properties. In addition, the active component in the garlic is less volatile than allicin in garlic powder and therefore more easily standardized. So the takeaway here is make sure that each day you get some garlic in your diet, preferably lightly sauteed so you can enjoy it in a meal, in rice, beans, casseroles, and soups. One last thing before we take our break and come back with your calls, because from now on, since I don't have guests today, I'm not doing our hard-hitting issues. I'm opening the lines up for you to be able to call in and share your points of view on any of the issues that we discuss on this show. That number is 888. Let's see, what is it? 888-874-4888. I think that's what it is. 888-874-4888. Blueberries linked to improved blood vessel health. This is a major study, and this was from the University of Louisville, University of Northwestern University, and University of Maine, three separate ones. Here's what it says. Animals fed a diet supplement with 8% wild blueberries experienced less constriction in blood vessels compared to animals fed a control diet. That was published in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. Quote, the unique goal and approach of our study was to examine the dietary effect of wild blueberries and not isolated bioactive compounds on vascular tone of the adult spontaneously hypertensive rat. Now, in lay language, what does this mean? This simply means that inside the skin of the blueberry, in that dark purple color, you have anthocyanins, antioxidants, phytochemicals, plant extracts, carotenoids, all of which can help make your blood vessels more pliable, softer. That's what you want. You don't want hard, calcified arteries. You want soft epithelial tissue. Just visualize your arteries as like a water hose. If you lay it out in the sun, it's going to dry out and become stiff. That's what happens with your arteries. That ends up as arterial sclerosis, and that's how a lot of people die. That's the latest good information on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment with your calls. A lot more to come, including a brief commentary on, I believe, it is my belief, that we have spent way too much money. We've created monster bureaucracies that impose themselves upon our life. We do not get any more protection for all the money we've spent, the more bureaucracies we create, the more self-serving politicians and corporatists that line up to get all that fat money from the American public. We're not any safer. Way over the top. But what is killing us? Every day, we're not doing anything about our society. That's the problem. That commentary in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Well, our board is flashing off here. We have lots of people from all over the United States. And let's start off with John from Wallingford, Connecticut. Hi, John.
Hello, Gary. I'm a new listener to your show. I really like it. If you can't get to all the questions, no problem. I understand you're pressed for time here. But I've been practicing natural medicine for in my own life for like 10 years now. I get a lot of benefit out of it. But unfortunately, I am on Zoloft, 100 milligrams. I had a really bad depressive episode and haven't on my own been able to find a way to get off of it. Also, I've heard, you know, that as the economy continues to collapse, that it's possible we won't be able to get access to these drugs anymore at some point. So my question to you is, do you see that happening with the drug companies? You know, namely, well, I won't mention the drug companies, but do you see that happening to them, and you know, how soon? And do you know of a way to get off of, like, Zoloft with a person that was diagnosed as major depressive disorder, currently in remission?
The answer to first question is no. Absolutely under no circumstances at all ever will you see in the United States there be a restriction on access to antidepressants. Why? Because the very pharmaceutical companies that make Zoloft, Paxil, Prozac, Effexor, and all the others control Congress. They are the wealthiest corporate entities. They are far exceeding the oil cartels, the natural gas cartels, even the food cartels. They make more profit. I did a chart last year. You'll see the chart up on my website. It shows you the percentage of profit that the top 10 selling drugs in the United States make over their 1 month, meaning 30-day generic cost. So if a drug costs for 30 days, a drug company, 10 cents, true, and they retail it at $240, you're dealing in hundreds of thousands of percent profit in their markup over the generic brand. Why can't we buy that for 10 cents? Under Medicaid, Medicare, VA, why couldn't they buy it? Because the pharmaceutical companies, through their lobbying groups, met with 14 major House representative members, plus some senators, and they lobbied these people. These people then inserted into the Medicare law that was passed, over 1,200 pages, that no one in Congress wrote a sentence of. The pharmaceutical industry wrote this law, even though the House is supposed to write laws, and they wrote them. They lobbied. They got it passed at 3 o'clock in the morning. Very shortly thereafter, all those people left Congress and went to work for the pharmaceutical company. The highest paid was $2 million a year, the chief sponsor of that law, and he quickly moved over $200 million a year, or $2 million a year, with the Pharmaceutical Advertising Council. No one thought that was unusual, because it's done with the military-industrial complex, where generals lobby for a weapon system. That weapon system gets passed, and once something gets passed in any area of our bureaucracy, it's never looked upon again, ever. In fact, you won't find anyone except some of the nonprofit whistleblower agencies that ever go in and look to see a basic question I've asked repeatedly. Now, I don't care what your political persuasion, everyone is invited to my table, John, as you know if you listen to the show.
Right.
I don't believe in ideologues, and I don't believe in ideology. Those are inflexible, immovable. They are true believing fanatics. Whether it's the Keith Olbermans and Rachel Maddow's, they are in alignment as official spokesperson for the official left and the official Democrats, just as Sean Hannity and Bar Riley, Laura Ingraham are the official spokespersons for the official right. Excluded, however, are the traditional liberal Democrats of FDR and the conservative Republicans of Eisenhower. Those are all excluded because they may have an idea that challenges the status quo. Within the two official parties, alignment occurs from the official corporate interest. And the official corporate interest is always represented by official oversight trade groups, with a pharmaceutical company, which is the number one, dwarfing in profits the financial industry. They have the Pharmaceutical Advertising Council, but then you can go into the Soft Drink Association or the Sugar Institute. Each one of these represents all the other corporate entities under their umbrella. So the military-industrial complex will have lobbying groups that then hire legislators, hire lobbyists, hire PR firms, but they always start with their insiders. The insiders are the generals, the colonels, the admirals, and nothing is ever done where it's obvious. They're too smart. It's a meeting at a restaurant where someone says, you know, you're making $125,000 a year, you're a three-star general, we're going to give you $1 million a year, but you got to help us put through this weapon system. While you're still in there, you can do that. When you're out, you won't be able to do that so easy. Now suddenly we see a weapon system that no one says, do we need it? Because no one can say it. Because if you say we don't need it, that means that your lobbyists and your lobbying efforts will say no to you. So it's yes, yes, yes to everything, from everyone, from every side, all the time, 24/7. Washington is nothing. It is nothing but a giant perversion of how power is used. It is the pathology of power. But it's all hidden from the public. So now you wake up one day, and you don't know that you're spending $5 billion this year on planes that we don't need. That we already, by the time this plane is finished, at $60 million a plane, it will already be antiquated. And they know that. But that won't hurt them. They'll go park it in the desert, as they do. Tens of thousands of these planes are parked out in the desert. Or they'll sell them off to another country. And then they start the next round. I've said many times, I don't care whether you say you're for big government or small government. Those are absolutely oxymoronic concepts. You should be for an effective government, yes or no?
Yeah.
John? Should you care whether or not the bureaucrats at the federal, state, or local level are working on your behalf or against your interest?
Working on my behalf.
Okay, so if we need rules and regulations in place to protect us, should we have those people necessary to do that?
Yes.
Okay. Otherwise, let's look at an example. If you had enough lobbying power that took away control over airline safety, so they managed to lobby to save money for the airlines, and so they didn't have to be as rigorous in how safe they made a plane, so now no plane was checked for total safety of all systems. Would you want to fly on that plane?
You're saying if it was overlooked in terms of safety?
Yes.
No, I wouldn't want to fly on it.
Would you want to eat food that came in from China that had never been inspected?
Oh, no.
Would you want to spend a night in a hotel that had no fire inspections, that had no inspections on its safety in case of emergency?
No, of course not.
All right. If you were in San Francisco, would you want to stay in a hotel that was built cheaply without any oversight and its CFO certificate of occupancy was given because it had managed through ALEC to get rid of legislation that would have protected you by inspecting to make sure that you were in a earthquake-safe hotel?
No.
And yet we have people on television talking about make the government so small you could drown it in a bathtub, right? And we also then have people say, don't trust Ralph Nader. He wants a gigantic government when he never wanted a big government. He merely wanted an effective one. And then you have other people who say, we never care about how big the government is. Let the government create the jobs. Would you want the government to create a job, knowing how bad they do almost everything?
Not this government, no.
Okay, so what do we really need is we need a government that's effective with outside oversight from independent people. Do you want a drug passed that it's passed based upon the studies that were given to the FDA, and then they have people inside the FDA who are going to see that it's passed because of the conflict of interest and where the money goes? Do you want to take that drug?
No, of course not.
Okay, well, you have been.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm
you have been. John, you've been taking drugs that are no better than a placebo. Except a placebo is a sugar pill, and it's not going to kill you, and you can get off of it. Your drug, you can't. And the only reason you're taking that drug is because the unmitigated greed of the people who run that company, who run all the pharmaceutical companies, and all they care about is creating diseases that don't exist, and then overprescribing medication, and even mandating it, like Gardasil, that's a killer drug, a vaccine, and the media goes right along with it because it is complicit, because you're either official media, in which case you have access to official power, or you're alternative media, in which case you're excluded and denied access to official power. So now take another look at your diagnosis. Was that an official diagnosis, or was that a diagnosis that may have had nothing to do with your brain chemistry being out of balance, but rather has more to do with life situations that you were not prepared for, you were not taught how to deal with the crisis in life, the catastrophe of life, the failures of life. You're giving excessive exuberance, as we all were at one point in our life, and then when everything went apart, we fell apart, and they come along saying it's brain chemical imbalance and take this drug if you want to be helped. Sound familiar?
Yeah, I mean, at the time I was given something, I was having trouble moving, and I had all the symptoms of what we would call a nervous breakdown.
A nervous breakdown is no more than the mind's inability to grasp for anything that can help them outside of feeling completely helpless, hence panic, and that's what we call bipolar. When you go through an extreme where you're hyper and then you're depressed and lethargic, and there's no brain chemical imbalance involved. And if you challenge your psychiatrist, in fact, you'll see in my new film undercover footage of 10 of the most respected psychiatrists in America having a completely normal person sit in that chair and very quickly be diagnosed from simple symptoms that anyone would have as having a brain disorder, and given a very powerful tranquilizer, including the one you took, and then when confronted later on the street, do you have any science proving anywhere in any medical literature that there is such a thing as brain chemical imbalance leading to any psychiatric disorder? The answer is universally no. So to make it even more emphatic, standing outside the American Psychiatric Association's annual meeting and interviewing dozens of psychiatrists from around the world going in, they all said the same thing. No, it's all subjective. Well, it's subjective. Why don't you ask maybe to do some talk therapy, some psychotherapy, maybe some psychoanalytical therapy, maybe some prayer, maybe having some becoming a big brother, a big sister, working within support groups, helping people on a non-pharmaceutical level. And they all agree, good idea, but we don't do that anymore because that's not where the money is. It takes too much time. For the hour it would take to counsel someone, we can see five patients and give them a prescription. So understand that before you accept the pathology of your illness, understand there is a pathology in the scientific community.
It has been, absolutely, I agree.
All right, it's been pathologized by greed, and it's metastasized. It's a living cancer. That is psychiatry. It is a fraudulent healing arts. There is no science behind psychiatry. You talk about quackery. It is the ultimate medical quackery. Now, that said, how can you help yourself? Well, you can start by understanding that what you're afflicted by, almost everyone in the United States will be afflicted at some point, that all of us have multiple ups and downs, that all of us go into crisis, that all of us are ill-prepared for this, that none of our schools teach us how to deal with anything but success. Remember this, John. We don't honor the person that wins the silver. We condemn them for having lost the gold.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at the results of the choices we've made only by the crisis we're in, and only when we're in a crisis. I say, what do you want as the outcome of the choices you make, and then only choose those elements that give you the choice, the outcome you want. So if you want to detoxify your body to help rebalance yourself, to give yourself more energy, you want to give your brain more energy, you want to give yourself more optimism, get hypnosis. Dr. Michael Ellner, he's the best I know. And then get yourself into the hands of someone who has a very positive disposition that can deal humanistically, a holistic, humanistic psychologist or therapist that are very compassionate, that are not looking to give you something that can cause suicidal ideation or weight loss, a loss of appetite, and all the other things that come with these absolutely what I believe should be banned. Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Thanks for your call. Let's go over and say hello to Bob from New York. Hi, Bob. You're on. Hi, Bob. Is Bob not there anymore? Okay. Then we'll go over and say hello to Alex from Long Island. How, Alex?
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
Good.
I'm a professional basketball player, and I've been dealing with a lot of inflammation as far in my Achilles tendon as far as bursitis and tendonitis and things like that. And I wanted to get your opinion on the PRP, the platelet-rich plasma injections, because I was debating something like that, and also anything you can do for health as far as anti-inflammatory tendon health, anything that would be natural, because I've been on a lot of non-steroidal anti-inflammatories given to me by the teams and things like that, and I've recently gotten off of them, and I don't want to go back on them.
Let me give you what I would do. First, I'm not going to recommend PRP injections. Instead, let's just take a little study here, and everyone listening who has any form of inflammation can benefit from this. What is inflammation? Inflammation is a natural reaction that occurs in the body when our biochemistry says we've just had an accident. We have either an injury, traumatic, we have bacterial or viral infections, but we have inflammation. And what happens, the body goes into defense mode. It becomes red, it heats up, it's tender, and it swells. Then, and understand you can have 100 different things that cause this. Any time there's tissue in the body that is inflamed, you're going to get response in the blood. How can we deal with this? A, we can understand that a lot of inflammation comes from allergies. So give up everything that's allergic. That means no wheat, dairy, sugar. Those are your most common allergens in yeast. Then start to cleanse the blood. Give it a whole makeover. How do we do that? By including chlorophyll-rich juices. The more chlorophyll we put in the body, the greater the turning off inflammation. Chlorophyll is like a great fire extinguisher. It's putting out the flame of inflammation. So you get the body about every 6.5 minutes, your blood loops through the body. As it's doing this, it's taking nutrients to the cell and toxins away. Let's enhance taking the toxins away. And we can do that by including certain nutrients in the juice. Now, the best juices would be watermelon, cabbage, and celery, cucumber combined. Spike with some vitamin C, 100 milligrams of B-complex, quercetin, which is a bioflavonoid. I would put in some flaxseed oil. I would take about 200 milligrams of grapeseed extract. And most importantly, I'd put in proteolytic enzymes. The enzymes aid in controlling inflammation. I would then take some superoxide dismutase, or SOD. That's also free radical scavenger and tones down inflammation. Bromelain is one of the single superstars of anti-inflammatory reaction in the body. It increases the breakdown of fibrin, which forms around the inflamed area and blocks the blood and lymphatic vessels from leading to swelling. So bromelain, and the best way of getting bromelain is simply to take it in tablet form. As directed, it's generally about anywhere from 100 to 200 milligrams. I would take it also with magnesium and L-cysteine. That enhances it. Silica is also very important in helping. And beta-1,3-D-glucan, that also fights inflammation. Vitamin E fights it. Aloe vera juice every 2 hours. Bilberry extract fights it. And Boswellia, B-O-S-W-E-L-L-I-A, Boswellia, and turmeric, which is curcumin, reduces inflammation. Cat's claw is good. Ginger, golden seal, padiarco, red clover, and yucca all are important. Horsetail is outstanding, and olive leaf extract follows it up. So go towards no fried food, no meat, no dairy, no sugar, no caffeine, no artificial sweeteners, and then you should be able to turn off the inflammation. All the best to you. And we have Gerald from Missouri, but I don't. Let's see if we have Gerald on the line. Hi, Gerald, you're on.
Right here. Thanks, Gary. Listen, about 10 years ago, my wife went to a complementary physician, and she was diagnosed with progesterone deficiency or estrogen dominance, but they said progesterone deficiency. And they put her on a compounded natural progesterone powder in capsule form once every night, 300 milligrams once a night every day. And that was about 10 years ago. Now my wife is pregnant, and our OB says, if we want, we're right now almost in the 14th week. We're in the 13th and a half week. And the OB said that if we wanted to, we could stop the natural progesterone at this time because the placenta takes over progesterone production. But since my wife has been on the natural progesterone for so long, we're kind of a little leery of just stopping it. I'd like to know what your thoughts are on that.
All right. Well, I believe that the physician is correct. And read the chapter on having a natural pregnancy in Be a Healthy Woman. You can go to the library and check it out, or you can go to Barnes & Noble and just sit there. It's a whole chapter on this very topic, and that will help you. I can't answer a question when a doctor's already given you a therapy, because that could be interfering in the outcome of that therapy. But I believe that your doctor's given some sound advice. Just back it up and be educated. I've written an article on this also. It's up on GaryNall.com. All the best to you. Now, I can't take any more, even though the board's full. I'm sorry, we've taken a lot of calls, and I still had some more information I want to give you, and especially the idea that we do not pay attention to budgets. We don't pay attention to bureaucracies. We don't pay attention to what they actually do. We seem to be very mindful of allowing people to, every day, to create fear in us that allows them the irrational exuberance towards making bad decisions. Let's go to war. And it's like the Marx Brothers in Duck Soup. You know, they march off, but they never show the consequences of when you're not marching home. You're coming back in a body bag or affected by depleted uranium, or end up with post-traumatic stress disorder and end up in a field down in Florida with no one around you to help you. We are very specific in which side of an argument we want to see and which side of an argument we refuse to. I believe that we should stop the madness of spending hundreds of billions of dollars a year supposedly to fight terrorists, when here are the actual 15 causes of death in the United States. Heart disease will lose over 700,000 this year. That's 29%. Cancer, close to 600,000, 22%. Cerebrovascular disease like stroke, 160,000-170,000. Chronic lower respiratory disease, COPD and emphysema, 125,000. Accidents, 101,000. Diabetes, about 100,000. Influenza pneumonia, about 62,000. Alzheimer's, 53,000. Nephritis septicemia, about 60,000. Chronic liver disease and cirrhosis, 27,000. And renal disease, 20,000. Homicide, 17,000. Parkinson's disease, 16,000 to 17,000. Now, those are your top 15 killers. But we are spending more each year on anti-terrorism than all those combined times 10. And they'll use the excuse, yeah, but if we didn't spend all this money, then there would have been attacks. And that's not so. We have not made ourselves any safer because of having 89-year-old women in wheelchairs strip search and inspecting their colostomy bag. True story. The insanity that we go to, all because one man who used to be Homeland Security chief started or invested in a company that makes scanners, and now we got scanners. But no one peels back the curtain to see everything that we're doing and have done for a long time in these bureaucracies is just utterly contemptible of truth. The reality is, for years now, we've been told about the threat of terrorism. And yet we think somehow we have a biological immortality, and that the only risk of death we face is the hands of terrorists. Let's just get real. Every day in the United States, 6,500 people die, mainly from age-related diseases. The federal government has been on a spending rampage since September 11, 2001. I think that if you look at the 3,000 Americans who, unfortunately and regretfully, lost their lives that day, compare them to the 2,416,425 Americans who died, and you start to think, wow, they died of diseases. Terrorism was responsible for approximately 0.001% of the deaths. And yet, we're not putting attention towards saving lives in America today. Preventing disease, it's nowhere on the agenda. Making up diseases that don't exist, like post-traumatic stress disorder, that's on the agenda. Selling and over-medicating people, that's on the agenda. Making more profit for big pharma, that's definitely on the agenda. And big hospital and insurance companies. So I believe it's time now that we stop the nonsense and reprioritize, putting the emphasis upon preventing disease and giving the best treatment we can for those who are sick and need our help in that hour. That has not been done up to this point. One last thing. I mentioned when young girls, this is the latest, by the way, quote, young girls now reaching puberty at 7. I'll quote this in the journal. This is Pediatrics. An increasing number of U.S. girls now reaching puberty as young as the age of 7, according to the study for Cincinnati Children's Hospital. Research examined 1,200 girls between the ages 6 and 8 who were living in Cincinnati, San Francisco, and East Harlem, New York. And then they found that these girls are reaching puberty very, very early. Why? And the problem is obesity, hormone-disrupting chemicals in the diet, and the more overweight you are, the more these chemicals you're going to have. Quote, some physicians worrying children are at higher risk of early puberty as a result of increasing prevalence of certain drugs, cosmetics, environmental contaminants called endocrine disruptors that can cause breath growth, pubic hair development, and other symptoms of puberty. Oh, and by the way, it also puts that young girl at a greater risk of disease later in life. And finally, cola causes serious bone density problems. According to a study, which is now out, and it was from the University of Boston, 2,500 adults were examined by Dr. Tucker and colleagues at Tufts University, and the authors report in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, quote, because of BMD is strongly linked with fractures, risks, and because cola is a popular beverage, this is of considerable public health importance. But instead of warning the American public that drinking cola can cause a loss in bone density and can lead to osteoporosis and thinning of the bones, instead, not a word is mentioned anywhere because guess who does a lot of lobbying, pays for a lot of ads on a lot of media? The cola beverage companies. Profits ahead of people. Shouldn't be that way, but it is. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to us today. Now, let's go over and say hello to Mike Rupert, who's standing by. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Gary. Happy Sunday.
Thank you.
We've got a really good show tonight, very important. We're trying to get the board operator hooked up with my guest, Robert Neuwirth, who has written an amazing book called Stealth of Nations about the System D economy. There is more economic activity happening almost outside of what you and I think of as the economy than there is on our side of the line. And it's amazing. It's all over the world. It's a great testament to human spirit. It's a very inspiring book. And so we have Robert Neuwirth with us tonight on the show. It's been a busy week. We've got to catch up on that, too.
Great. We look forward to hearing from you shortly. And keep in mind, for anyone who wants to go to any of the archives, we have all the archives by topic, by guest, by date. So if you forget one, we've got the others. And go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, go to the archives. Tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I will be having a panel discuss the fraud and the failure of the war on drugs. Within that, you'll hear about why we continue to have such a thing. As stupid as Prohibition was, they finally got the message and stopped it. Why haven't we stopped this? Is it because of privatization? Because of the amount of money that's made by keeping people locked up in prison? Once again, the American public thinks that something has been done right when it hasn't, walks away from the problem, assuming that it will be self-correcting with proper oversight, and it never is, and then corporations or bureaucracy become bloated and become self-serving, and the public is paying for all of it and not benefiting from any of it. We will go into this in great depth tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour. Have a nice day, everyone.